Here's your host, New York Times best-selling author, Matt Adams.
Yeah, I jokingly talk about it with Mike and my family. And when I have all these people ask me for autographs and pictures and questions and podcasts and all that stuff, it's like, it's hilarious to think 2 years ago I was working security at a bar, and, you know, it was a much different scenario in my life.
Welcome into the Fairways of Life show. Congratulations to Jake Knapp etching his victory on the PGA Tour in his rookie year. We'll have much more coming up from Jake Knapp. We have tons to go through with you today. Of course, his muscling his way into victory in Mexico means that you're going to be hearing from Jake in his press conference today. A lot of his press conference today, John Burkett went through and cut it up for us. By the way, happy birthday to John Burkett. It's his birthday today. But he went through and cut it up for us, and we're going to be able to bring you much of that sound. Patty Tavitanikit continues her winning ways, winning again, this time in her home country. And I love the fact that she's back on a winning streak. I think that bodes well for the major championship season on the LPGA side of the game, not to mention the events as they continue to come, as they're in the middle of their Asian swing right now. Rumors are swirling that this will be the week that Anthony Kim returns to the professional golf ranks. We'll go through that in some detail and solicit your opinions on the same. Also, the Australian version of Golf Digest is reporting that the circuit's next target is Hideki Matsuyama. That, according to Greg Norman. What are your thoughts on that as well? As to the leaderboard, let's pull that up once again on what happened in Mexico on the PGA Tour and that victory by Jake Knapp. There you can see it. He won it by two over Sammy Valimaki. I enjoyed it. I'm not sure how you guys played it. I mean, we heard all the speculation all week talking about the fact that the fields were not as strong, given the fact that this was not a signature event, but we have a non-signature event coming up this week that has a pretty good field as well. I ended up being entertained, which to me is the reason why I wish even the signature events had a larger field in a cut, because we get these opportunities to see a couple of young guns out there battling out. And as you just heard from Jake, a story that is pretty unique. He spoke a lot about the tattoo that he has in his arm, and he had it there specifically, so he knew every time he would come through with a shot, it would be seen. And those are the initials of his grandfather and all that his grandfather meant to him and to his game. These are from his Instagram account. He says he still talks to his grandfather a day, sends him a text after he plays. He used to talk to him after every round. And everything that he meant. It's really cool to get to know somebody that way. And, of course, the story about Jake as, again, as he calls it, security at a bar. And even on the TV the other last week, they were kind of chuckling about that, going, hey, he was a bouncer. And the fact that that was only in 21-22, and here he is in 24, and he's now a winner on the PGA Tour, and he'll carry that mantle with him forevermore. So I found it to be very, very entertaining, especially down the stretch, because as it started, yeah, he was definitely struggling with where his round started. And it's interesting. I'll give you some stats to back up what I'm talking about. First of all, Jake Knapp won at 29 years, 8 months, and 25 days. He earned 500 FedEx Cup points. He moves to number 8th in the FedEx Cup standings. He's fully exempt through the 2026 season. Now, when you win this early in the season, it's almost like you got 3 years out of it, right? Because you have the balance of the year that you're in. He is 25, and he has through 26 that he is exempt on tour. He earns a spot in all of the remaining signature events this season. That's 5. Plus, he has earned himself a starting spot in the Players, the Masters, the PGA Championship, and then the Century in 2025. He joins Matthew Pavone, Nick Dunlap as first-time winners and rookies to win this season. 3 rookies won in the entire season that was last year. Now, here's where I was getting to in terms of how things went for him yesterday, right? He hit 2 of 13 fairways in the final round, becoming the first player since all the way back to 1983 to hit 2 or less fairways in the final round and go on to victory. He made 23 birdies in the first 54 holes and just 2 in the final round. He does become the 6th 54-hole leader or co-leader to win this season from 8 individual stroke play events as yet. He led the field in birdies with 25. Strokes gained tee to green, he was 11.532 positive. That's impressive. Notwithstanding the final round, that's impressive. Strokes gained approach to green, he was 8.649. As to how he got there, he posted 10 top 10 results in 22 starts in the 2023 Korn Ferry Tour to earn his PGA Tour card for this year. He won three times in PGA Tour Canada, most recently at the 2022 CRMC Championship. So with that, let's hear from the winner, Jake Knapp, as Jake Knapp went into the details of what went well for him during the week, what didn't go well for him on Sunday, how they settled it all down, and a little bit more about the background of him, his family, and that unique relationship he had with his grandfather.
Yeah, it's pretty amazing. I don't think, like we were just talking about, I don't think it's fully sunk in yet, simply because I haven't looked at the schedule and all the events that I'm into now. Obviously, I know the Masters and everything like that, but yeah, it feels pretty amazing. Yeah, I was super calm last night eating dinner and hanging out and going to bed was an issue. And then I kind of woke up early out of nowhere at like 5:30 and was tough going back to sleep. I was, more so just excited to get this day going. And not that I wanted it to be over with, but it was one of those where I was excited to get it going. I wanted to get into the moment, but did a good job of kind of laying there for an hour or so and getting a few more hours of sleep. Yeah, I mean, it was one of those where we kind of tried to not leaderboard watch and just focus on my game. We knew the course was set up a little bit tougher today. There weren't going to be any super crazy low scores, especially on the back nine. So just kind of felt like it was one of those, if I could have a lead going into the back nine, that if I just kind of make a bunch of pars and force guys to make birdies, it's going to be tough. And if they do, good on them. But yeah, after that start, wasn't super ideal. And we just said, it's kind of the three worst holes I could have played, and we still have a two shot lead, and we got a free tee shot right here, so let's just get this swing out of the way, make some pars, give ourselves some birdie chances, and we'll be just fine. 100% the entire time, because you think about Kobe Bryant, Steph Curry, Michael Jordan, it's not like they don't look at the score with a minute to go. So it kind of gives you a good idea of how the course is playing. If I would have seen a bunch of the guys at 12 get to 17 under through nine holes, and I'd be like, yeah, okay, the course is very gettable. But I felt a lot of them were at 12, 13, 14 and not really moving. So it was windy and it was playing tough, pins were in tough spots. So I kind of, once we got to like 14, I looked at the leaderboard and I was like, okay, it's a two-man race, and I just got to focus on kind of what he does and just kind of played it basically as match play from there. Walking off 17, I told Mike, let's have a conversation, because I know that there's some guys that play it left of that fairway into the opposite hole. And I was like, let's have a conversation, even though I've never done it, never seen it in the practice round or anything like that. I'm like, only place you can't go is out of bounds, right? So, but I hadn't driven it that well all day and felt like if anything, I was either missing it left or kind of overcutting. So I had a bit of a two-way miss going. And I was like, let's just aim just left of the bunker, hit our fade. If it goes in the bunker, fine. If I overcut it, it's in the fairway. And he said he loved it. So yeah, just trusted our game plan and went about business. Pretty surreal, to be honest. We talked about it at the beginning of the year with the Farmers, with what happened at Farmers and, basically barely getting into Waste Management and then not being into AT&T and then not being into Riviera. And it was just like, man, this is going to be, it's going to be really tough to play into these signature events unless you win. And, everybody wants to win out here. There's a lot of guys who played out here for a long time who have never won. And, it's just one of those things where now all of a sudden there's a lot of doors open. The Masters part hasn't even begun to sunk in yet. I mean, that's going to be surreal, stepping on the grounds there. But, Mike and I just keep talking about it. It's like, just keep putting in good work, keep putting ourselves in positions at these tournaments and put our head down, go to work, and good things are going to happen. And, sure enough, this week it worked out. And then in terms of the roller coaster of my career, I mean, yeah, I jokingly talk about it with Mike and my family. And when I have all these people ask me for autographs and pictures and questions and podcasts and all that stuff, it's like, it's hilarious to think 2 years ago I was working security at a bar and, it was a much different scenario in my life. So I'm very appreciative of being out here, being able to play golf professionally and just this entire atmosphere. I mean, it's what I practice and work for every single day. When I was a kid, there weren't many, there really aren't many PGA Tour events around Orange County where I'm from, Costa Mesa. But one of the ones was the WGC match play at La Costa. It's about an hour from my house. So my dad took my brother and I there when we were a kid. And I was just hounding Stevie all day to give me a ball, give me a ball, give me a ball. And he kept on telling me after the round. And then Tiger finally closed out Stephen Ames 9 and 8 in the 10th hole. And I was kind of standing back by the 10th tee. They walked right by and I asked them for a ball and neither of them really did anything. They walked into the locker room and I was like, dang, like there they go. And then 10 seconds later, Stevie walked out and it was just like, you know, hey kid, tossed me his ball. And it's pretty awesome. It's the only, really the only piece of sports memorabilia that I have that I really cherish. It's just still got it in the same little plastic case sitting on my shelf at home.
Isn't that a cool story? My favorite story was the way that ended with him getting that golf ball from Stevie Williams and keeping it to this day. I'm surprised that nobody asked him about the mullet. Maybe earlier in the week and I just missed it somewhere, but you think that would have been a topic of discussion at his press conference with the look and the feel and who he is. But he is definitely a player, I think, that's easy to be a fan of. And congratulations to Jake with his first victory on the PGA Tour. And as I mentioned, the rumors are circulating. And in this case where there's smoke, there's clearly fire. There was an article from Rex Hoggard, Golf Channel. You can find it at NBCSports.com. Saying that Anthony Kim is on his way back into professional golf and he will make his debut this week with LIV in Saudi Arabia. Which leads me to the question of why. So much of what's swirling around in the game of golf today comes down to that essential question. Why? What's the motivation? And when it comes to Anthony Kim, it is a compelling, it is an interesting story. I have to say that I am a huge fan of Anthony Kim. The image of who Anthony Kim was back in the day. It's been nearly 12 years since Anthony Kim has been a part of the competitive stage. The word was that he had an insurance policy and the insurance policy covered a career-ending injury and that it paid out. And as a result, he went out and he has virtually disappeared. What was it about Anthony Kim that made him so compelling? Many things, I think. It was the fact that in a golf world that often is vanilla, Anthony Kim was a kaleidoscope. It was that million-watt smile. It was the often-flowing locks that he had. It was this. It was the style. It was the brashness. You remember the big AK belt buckles? It was that go for broke style. It was for all those reasons that for all of us, I think, it was easy to be a fan of Anthony Kim, particularly when it was a time where Tiger Woods, not far removed from the height of his prowess, was surrounded by as much question marks as answers. And so Anthony Kim was a player that we felt great about and felt like, you know, this is what's going to usher us into the future. The way that he connected, albeit 12 years on now, was almost as if he was a modern-day Arnold Palmer. And then came 2012. 2011 wasn't great, but in 2012, with two made cuts in 10 attempts, Anthony Kim stepped away. Injuries, perhaps more, he left the scene. Again, speculation being that he got the payout and he disappeared. And now there's the prospect of him coming back, to which I go back to my essential question. But why? What is and where is the why that lies behind this decision? Because in retrospect, when we look back, and I just mentioned to you that there was a sense that he was a modern-day Arnold Palmer of his time. Well, what connection has he had with the fans in the last almost 12 years? Because his inner circle, and believe me, we tried, his inner circle protected him vehemently. No updates, no interviews, no checking in with you folks just to let you know how we're doing. Is he coming back because of a burning desire to compete? Did he miss it that much that a 38-year-old man can be compared to a 26-year-old who was already struggling and at the time had multiple injuries? Can we expect more? Are we talking about rust here, or is it beyond recognition of the ship that once was and now it's just a pile? So for me, in my heart, I want Anthony Kim to succeed. I love the comeback story. Now, this one isn't necessarily draped with any type of glory in my mind because I don't really know what drove him away to begin with, because he chose to not discuss it. He chose to keep it to himself. He has every right to that privacy. I'm not denying him that. But now you're coming back to the main table again for the feast. So I hope that he performs well. But at 38 years old, with what he already went through from his 20s and then having disappeared for decade plus, how much can we really expect? And is this about the hope of seeing Anthony Kim in all of his glory regained again? Or is this now about a touch of gray and a lot of money? When we come back, we're going to talk about where the world of golf is with one of the most respected voices in the game of golf as the Fairways of Life show continues. It is presented by the PGA Tour Superstore. They are the number one golf retailer from coast to coast, just opened a big, new, beautiful store in Virginia, and they have them everywhere. Check them out if you wear it, if you swing it, if you need to learn from it. You'll find it at the PGA Tour Superstore.
Relax. Easy now. Find your happy place. It's all in the hips. Just tap it in.
Yes!
Find the latest clubs and apparel at Golf's Happy Place, the PGA Tour Superstore.
In Ireland, golf is more than just a game. Come and experience our world-famous Lynx courses and our world-famous Parkland courses, all set alongside world-famous scenery. And visit our world-famous historic sites. And while you're here, enjoy our world-famous hospitality. Fill your heart with Ireland at ireland.com/golf.
It screams. It tracks. It's soft. It reacts. It is the Bridgestone Tour B with a game-changing reactive cover designed to spring faster off your driver and stick longer to your wedges. Try Bridgestone's Tour Bs, the Tour Ball reinvented.
The Gen 6 iron is a culmination of everything that we have learned as a team, the absolute best golf club I've ever hit. It's something special. Say hello to the new PXG Gen 6 iron. The longest, most accurate irons we've ever made. They go higher and farther than any iron that I have hit to date, and they're so easy to hit. Super excited for the consumer to try this. They're gonna love them.
PXG, nobody makes golf clubs the way we do, period.
Baseball? Nah. Football? Done it. I think I'm gonna go after the PGA Tour.
Bo, you're gonna need the right equipment company.
I think I got that.
You know, Tour Edge backs all their clubs with a lifetime warranty.
I know.
They ship all their premium custom clubs in 48 hours.
I know.
All their premium clubs are hand-built in the USA.
I know.
You know, Tour Edge has won 35 times out here.
Guys, I know.
Pound for pound, nothing comes close.
Boyne Golf provides the ultimate world-class golf destination with 10 championship-caliber courses spanning three resorts. Centered in Michigan's northern Lower Peninsula, the courses are the products of some of the game's masters, including Robert Trent Jones Sr., Arthur Hills, and Donald Ross. From the all-inclusive vacation packages, elite instruction with the Boyne Golf Academy, tournaments, and so much more, Boyne Golf truly offers an unrivaled Michigan golf vacation experience. Just log on to boynegolf.com.
Welcome back to the Fairways of Life show. Pleasure to have your company from wherever you are joining us around the world. All right, Dom, I didn't get a chance to ask you in segment one before we welcome in our guests. What have you done for the question of the day? What's hanging out there?
Yes, good morning, Matt. Yeah, I'm very excited about today's question of the day. I think it's a fascinating one. I was thinking about it last night, in fact. I was wondering who people think is going to be the next major champion, and it's their first major win. You understand what I'm saying? So
yeah.
Xander Schauffele, Patrick Cantlay, Max Homa, that's who I have on my list. I also have a write-in category. And early in the, we're very early in the running. We'll talk about this later in the program, Matt, but there's a lot more people. It's at 62% of people are writing in right now, and I'm getting a lot of Victor Hovland.
Who do you have as before you leave, then? Tell me what the choices are.
Xander Schauffele, Patrick Cantlay, Max Homa, and they're at low percentages, 15%, 12%, 9%. And then I have a write-in category because I can't list 50 names.
Oh,
obviously.
I thought I okay.
So there's a write-in category.
I'm sorry, I was confused. I thought Hovland was one of the choices.
A lot of people are saying Victor Hovland. There's a there's a laundry list. I think that list of guys is probably 12 to 15 deep. So I think it's a fascinating discussion. We can talk about it later, but
okay.
I'm excited about today's question.
Yeah, I am too, and I'm excited about my next guest. And to kind of set the table for the discussions we're about to have, I want to take you guys back to the genesis where Rory McIlroy, post-round, was talking about kind of his vision of the future. And I wouldn't say that this has lit a firestorm, but it's definitely at least defined differences in approach and philosophy. Here's Rory.
I don't know how long these signature events are going to run for, if it's going to be a year and then they're going to look at them again and see what worked and what didn't work. I think for you know, these really big events and the ones that carry a lot of meaning and history, Riviera, Memorial, Bay Hill, those sort of events, I think this week's worked pretty well. It would be great to have a couple extra guys still playing over the weekend, but overall I think it's worked pretty well so far. Yes and no. I mean, I think it's all pie in the sky stuff. It's all very I think there has to be a component of the Southern Hemisphere, Australia, South Africa. There obviously has to be a component of the Far East, whether that be Korea, Japan, China, obviously the Middle East as well. I mean, we've been going to the Middle East for a long time, but obviously Dubai, Saudi, and then sort of working our way from east to west and back into the United States for the, for the sort of spring, summertime, go back, I don't think it'll look too dissimilar to what it is right now, but maybe the front end of the year and the back end of the year might look a little bit different. But I mean, I still think there's, I don't think we need to blow everything up, but there definitely needs to be some tweaks, I think.
They couldn't be fulfilled.
No, I think if you're looking for a global, I think, you'd have tournaments that look a little bit more like this. I would think.
Rory, would those events in theory possibly fit count on the PGA Tour and World Tour as well?
I would think it would be one tour. I think you just create a tour for the top 80 players in the world.
So does that mean that then you would not play the other tours? Or?
Yeah, then I think everything sort of feeds up into that one. If the way I look at it, it'd be like Champions League and European football. It sort of sits above the rest of the leagues, and then all those leagues sort of feed up into that, and the best of the best play against each other in the Champions League, is the way I would think about it.
You've been doing it your whole career, but do you think there's an appetite among youngish Americans to do that as well?
I think there's more of an appetite than there used to be. I mean, I think about Max and JT going down to South Africa at the end of last year and playing, and Max winning down there. I think there's more of an appetite for the young Americans to travel nowadays, maybe compared to the sort of 90s and 2000s. So, but again, you have to make it work for everyone. But I think for the most part, it has to work for fans and sponsors and media. And then if you can have it work for them and you create a product that's really good for the fan, then honestly, I think you just have to convince the players to buy into it, because that's what's going to be best for them. Especially if you're going to be an owner of that tour.
Or you just, 2 minutes laid out a pretty simplistic idea. Has it gone farther than that, do you think, within the important sectors of the game that enact that?
I think so, but again, I said this at the back end of last year. everyone's got their own interest in this game, and that's what happens when you've got quite a, you know, a fractured landscape at this point. So it's trying to align everyone's interests and trying to convince everyone that this is the right thing to do for the game of golf as a whole. And if you can convince everyone of that, then it would be pretty simple. But you know, right now it's just trying to get everyone singing off the same hymn sheet.
All right, thanks.
How many, for you personally, how many tournaments in the U.S. could you see yourself play?
I think there would have to, say if you do it, you know, say you do a 24 event schedule, four of those being the major championships, and say there's 20, I'd say at least half of those, if not more, I mean 10 or 12. I mean, you still have to, you know, this is the biggest market in golf in the world, so you have to, you know, you have to take that into account. But there's no reason why, you know, for other parts of the year that we can't go further afield and play in some of those big markets. I think would be beneficial, not just for those markets and those fans, but also for the tour as a whole and media partners and sponsors and everyone else.
Rory McIlroy from the Genesis just a short time ago talking about his vision of how the game of golf at its highest competitive level can move forward. Covering the game at its highest competitive level and otherwise has been Ian Carter, the BBC golf correspondent, for more than 20 years. This year he will be covering his 90th major championship. He has authored multiple books. We'll be talking about his new book coming up as well. Pleasure to welcome Ian to the program. My friend, it is good to see you. I'm curious what your initial reaction is to those words of Rory McIlroy.
Well, first and foremost, you've made me feel very old. Good morning to you, Matt. Yeah, I mean, the first words that he said in that segment were, it's all pie in the sky. And that has to be the big concern for anyone who'd like to see a global tour, the game united, and it traveling around the world at the very highest level. I think we're a long, long way from that occurring. And I think you could sense that Rory McIlroy is at the moment, given the way that the game is shaping up at the moment. It is fractured. It's very difficult to see players wanting to, when they've got this sort of run of signature events, $20 million purses, without having to even find their passport. It's a very attractive proposition if you're based in the United States. But certainly speaking from this side of the pond, it's a very, very attractive proposition to think that the game could be truly global and have these guys playing against each other regularly all around the world.
How shocked were you, Ian, last June when it was announced that the PGA Tour, the DP World Tour, and that LIV were trying to become as one?
I was very, very shocked, and I wasn't alone. I remember vividly when that email came through at 3 o'clock in the afternoon, and I was actually having a late lunch at the time, and it felt like it was some kind of April Fool's joke, wasn't it? The thought that these deadly enemies could come together in the way that was being suggested then, and actually, it's quite an interesting thing to do now is to go back and read that press release and read what was being envisioned at that point, because the whole situation has moved on massively since then. Obviously, the investment from SSG, we still don't know how the negotiations that are, we're told, ongoing between the PGA Tour and the Saudi Arabian PIF are going to play out. But the landscape really has changed an awful lot since then.
And couldn't the argument be made, Ian, that the game of golf at its highest competitive levels has actually improved, not necessarily from the product that is being offered to the people because the stars are on various tours, but from a player's perspective, have they not benefited from LIV coming on the scene with increased purses in these signature events?
Oh, in financial terms, they certainly have. There's no doubt about it. But the one word that kept coming up, certainly in the last 3 or 4 months, has been sustainable. How sustainable is this level of remuneration on both sides of the fence? Because LIV ultimately will need a return on their massive investment. They've got very, very deep pockets, as we know, and they can wait longer than most investors can. But nonetheless, you know, the billions that are going in from SSG into the PGA Tour present another question as well, because there will be a demand for a return on that investment. And it's hard to see how that can be maximized when the game is fractured. And that applies to both sides of the equation, to the LIV side and certainly the PGA Tour as well.
You know, notwithstanding one's opinion of Saudi Arabia and the sovereign fund, the public investment fund, has the sting of those who would be against it for whatever reasons they have, but has that sting diminished by the fact that this public investment fund is diversifying and is investing in so many of the world's major sports at the highest tier?
Well, it goes across the board, doesn't it? It goes across, you know, if you, depending on which taxi you decide to ride in, that could well have Saudi Arabian investment in it as well. And that diversification certainly, I think, does kind of dilute that potential feeling of unease at doing business with Saudi Arabia. But from just the golf point of view, the very fact that the PGA Tour have decided to try and do a deal with Saudi Arabia, that changed the landscape massively. And we've heard John Rahm talk about that in the wake of his move to LIV. I think it made it easier for him to do that, and do that in the hope, if not the knowledge, that potentially there could be a coming together that would allow him somewhere down the line to return and play the PGA Tour events that he would want to play. So, as I say, the landscape has changed. It was changed massively by June the 6th, and the aftershocks have continued, and have continued to an extent that has profoundly changed the landscape going forward. The problem that the game has is that we don't know definitively what that landscape is yet. And I think there are more aftershocks to come.
Cannot wait to continue this conversation with Ian Carter. Amongst his acute observations is the reality that he is coming out with a new book as well called Golf Wars, which I want to get into in some detail with him. I also want to ask Ian about some of the things that are going on in the golf world today. These rumors about Hideki Matsuyama leaving the PGA Tour, Anthony Kim potentially coming back into the competitive circle. Does that have an impact? Is that sending any ripples across the global golf scheme? As we continue this conversation, we'll be back with it right after this break. But first, I want to tell you that PXG is once again offering their driver challenge, this time for their Black Ops driver. They say they're putting their money where their mouth is, and you bring in your driver, put it right up against the Black Ops driver, and if your driver and your golf swing perform better than their driver with your golf swing, then you'll walk out of there with $100. I don't see how you can lose. Log on to pxg.com for more information. We'll be back with more of Ian Carter after this.
Relax. Easy now. Find your happy place. It's all in the hips. Just tap it in.
Yes!
Find the latest clubs and apparel at Golf's Happy Place, the PGA Tour Superstore.
In Ireland, golf is more than just a game. Come and experience our world-famous Lynx courses and our world-famous Parkland courses, all set alongside world-famous scenery. And visit our world-famous historic sites. And while you're here, enjoy our world-famous hospitality. Fill your heart with Ireland at ireland.com/golf.
It screams. It tracks. It's soft. It reacts. It is the Bridgestone Tour B with a game-changing reactive cover designed to spring faster off your driver and stick longer to your wedges. Try Bridgestone's Tour Bees, the tour ball reinvented.
The Gen 6 iron is a culmination of everything that we have learned as a team, the absolute best golf club I've ever hit. It's something special. Say hello to the new PXG Gen 6 iron. The longest, most accurate irons we've ever made. They go higher and farther than any iron that I have hit to date, and they're so easy to hit. Super excited for the consumer to try these. They're gonna love them.
PXG, nobody makes golf clubs the way we do, period.
Baseball? Nah. Football? Done it. I think I'm gonna go after the PGA Tour.
Bo, you're gonna need the right equipment company.
I think I got that.
You know, Tour Edge backs all their clubs with a lifetime warranty.
I know.
They ship all their premium custom clubs in 48 hours.
I know.
All their premium clubs are hand-built in the USA.
I know.
You know, Tour Edge has won 35 times out here.
Guys, I know.
Pound for pound, nothing comes close.
Boyne Golf provides the ultimate world-class golf destination with 10 championship-caliber courses spanning three resorts. Centered in Michigan's northern Lower Peninsula, the courses are the products of some of the game's masters, including Robert Trent Jones Sr., Arthur Hills, and Donald Ross. From the all-inclusive vacation packages, elite instruction with the Boyne Golf Academy, tournaments, and so much more, Boyne Golf truly offers an unrivaled Michigan golf vacation experience. Just log on to boynegolf.com.
Zero Friction introduces the Wheel Pro Push Cart Golf Bag with its revolutionary 3-in-1 design, supportive legs that spring into action, a comfort grip handle with three locking positions, accessories for the modern golfer enhanced by 7 pockets for more storage, and removable all-terrain wheels which slide right into place. The new Zero Friction Wheel Pro Golf Bag checks every box for every golfer. Push, carry, or cart, the decision is yours thanks to Zero Friction. Head to ZeroFriction.com today. Welcome back to the Fairways of Life show this Monday. If you want to weigh in on Dom's question of the day, who will be the next first-time major champion, log on to our Fairways of Life YouTube channel. Ian Carter, BBC golf correspondent, is our guest. Ian, do you think that have the major championships actually benefited from this golf fractured landscape?
I think they're certainly benefiting from it at the moment, Matt, because they're obviously the only four events where all of the world's best players come together. And I think that gives them an extra level of interest that no other golf tournament can possibly command. And, you know, we have the Players' Championship coming up in a couple of weeks. It remains a fantastic event on a fantastic golf course and one that all PGA Tour players want to win. But it is no longer the first gathering of all of the world's best players all in the same place, which is what its calling card was for so very many years, certainly when it's been played in that March date. That will happen at the Masters, which doesn't need any extra kind of bigging up, does it? But it gets that dividend. But I think it's a short-term issue in many respects until we get some kind of resolution over official world golf ranking points and that kind of thing, because ultimately we're going to be seeing majors that aren't going to have some of the world's best golfers in it. Taylor Gooch is someone who was the most successful player on LIV last year, is certainly a player who is perfectly capable of gracing a major championship field. And it's not happening for him at the moment because of the world ranking situation. And that, again, is one of the downsides of the current fractured scenario. But overall, yes, the majors are the places where we're going to see the world's best players getting together. And as a result, they have secured a dividend from the current situation.
As a golf correspondent, what does it mean to you to hear that Anthony Kim may be back on the scene as early as this week?
It's interesting. I filed my piece today for the BBC Sport website, which didn't touch on LIV or anything really. It was a look back at some of the feel good stories of the weekend. And the editor came back to me and said, "Oh, what do you think, is Anthony Kim going?" And the editors are really keen on this story, because I think for the reasons that you outlined, 10 minutes ago on the show, he's someone who does generate an awful lot of interest. He had a great deal of charisma when he was at the height of his powers. And now he brings the intrigue of whether he can compete 12 years on from the last time that we saw him. So it's a big story for this week. I received footage on my phone of him practicing in Dubai. So that's another tick in the box that suggests that he will be appearing in the Middle East this week in the live event at Jeddah. And it's going to be fascinating to see how well he can compete. But, you know, this is happening at a time when Liv are stepping up the pressure as far as world rankings are concerned. And then you say, well, hang on a minute, you're giving a place in your tournaments to someone who's not played for 12 years. And yes, he had a great career when he was at the height of his powers. But how does this reconcile with trying to be and prove that you are worthy of world ranking points? And that puts a big question mark, I think, over his participation in terms of the wider golfing firmament, certainly this week. But it's a story that brings intrigue and interest to the game. There's no doubt about that.
And what of that Australian Golf Digest report that Greg Norman is saying that their biggest target right now is Hideki Matsuyama? Are you putting a lot of stock behind that?
Well, it doesn't surprise me. And certainly, you know, in the other periods of live recruitment, Matsuyama's name has not been far away from discussions. And there was a point when it actually felt like a surprise when he didn't go there, because he is such an attractive commodity, being a Japanese player and a Masters winner, and now a winner again on the PGA Tour of one of the big signature events. It would be a massive coup for Liv to be able to get him. It would be a very expensive one as well in terms of the money that would be needed to lure him, I'm sure. But again, that's another watch this space, isn't it? And certainly Greg Norman loves to lob these hand grenades in to generate that interest, discussion about Liv. You know, it's a classic PR move, isn't it? Even if there's not that much substance to it, here we are, we're talking about it. And that's exactly what Greg Norman wants.
Whether we're talking about Matthew Pavone and his victory now on the PGA Tour, Sami Valimaki gave a gallant run this past weekend against Jake Knapp. Where does the DP World Tour fit in this jigsaw puzzle of, again, to use the phrase, the fractured landscape?
Well, it's a good question. And, you know, you highlight two players there. I'll throw another one in there, Bob McIntyre, who showed up well in Mexico this weekend. And the players who have graduated, Nicolai Højgaard being another one, coming through the DP World Tour and then securing a place on the PGA Tour, they have shown the quality of their golf and that they are, you know, perfectly capable of not just surviving, but thriving on the biggest circuit in the world. So that speaks to the quality of golf that is played on the DP World Tour. But where does it fit in the firmament right now? Is it in all reality just a feeder tour to the PGA Tour? Could it be a feeder tour to Rory McIlroy's World Tour idea? Yes, I certainly think that that is a case. But Guy Kinnings will be taking over as the chief executive officer there when Keith Pelly steps aside at the beginning of April. And he has a massive task on his hands to maintain the relevance, I think, of the European Tour. And let's face it, this is at a time when Europe has been celebrating a fantastic Ryder Cup victory. There is an awful lot to look at on the DP World Tour and celebrate at the moment. But, and it has been the case, whether it's been formalized or not, for the last 10, 20 years, any player that does well on the DP World Tour is then looking to move on to the PGA Tour or be snapped up by Liv. So it's got to find its place within the firmament, and it faces an awful lot of challenges, I think, in that process. But it is still backed by big sponsors, big television deals, and it has the Ryder Cup. So I don't think all is lost by any stretch of the imagination.
Your new book coming out in April, Golf Wars, Ian. This one really intrigues me because the S obviously is a dollar sign. And I'm really curious about the final paragraph, the final chapter, because this very much seems like a story that is continuing to develop. How much for you was this book, first and foremost, about kind of laying it all out there so that people could understand how we arrived at the complicated situation that we're in?
That's exactly what the book is about. It's a commentary on what has happened in the last couple of years that really has brought this unprecedented turmoil to the game. And I've also tried to bring into it, you know, the gulf that was happening in that environment and the way that gulf has been coloured. You know, the prologue to the book is very much Rory McIlroy against Patrick Reed at the Dubai Desert Classic. And that was an epic duel that was coloured totally by the environment in which the game is being played at the moment, because obviously Reed had gone to live. And it was a tournament that McIlroy wanted to win perhaps more than any other outside his major successes because of who was on that leaderboard and the antipathy that was going on at that time. And it's extraordinary. You know, I was writing that pretty contemporaneously. And then to be, by the end of the book, talking about McIlroy saying, well, John Rahm has to be allowed to play in the European Ryder Cup team. And, you know, the complete about turn that McIlroy has had over Saudi investment and LIV, it's extraordinary. It was a very, very difficult book to write because you just didn't know what the final chapter would be. And as you say, the situation is ongoing. But what I hope is that anyone who reads it is then going to have a good idea, as and when we get to wherever we get, they'll have a good idea of what happened in the background to get us towards that finishing position, whatever that might be.
The book is called Golf Wars, LIV and Golf's Bitter Battle for Power and Identity by Ian Carter. It will be available in April wherever fine books are sold. Ian, are you hopeful for the immediate and the long-term future of professional golf?
I've got mixed feelings about it, if I'm honest, Matt. Yes, I am hopeful because this whole scenario has generated so much interest in the game that I think can potentially be harnessed, and potentially with all the investment that's going in, there is a massive opportunity to use that horrible phrase, grow the game, whatever that means. But if it can grow interest in it, then I think that is obviously a good thing. And if more people are playing and more people are watching, then that is what the sport has to be striving for. But I do think that the amount of money that is sloshing around there, the sense of entitlement that you feel from players and administrators, It is moving the game away from the hardcore fans. And it's why I wrote the piece that I wrote today, just celebrating the fact that a delivery truck driver managed to win enough money in Kenya this week on the DP World Tour to be able to sustain his career going forward. You know, I actually really looked forward to the Mexico Open when people were saying, oh, look at the quality of the field, only four players from the top 50. What we knew from that tournament last week, and we saw it with the winner, Jake Knapp, was that players were playing to change their lives. And I think that is one of the great things about professional golf. It's why people get interested in it. It's why people feel invested of a weekend watching. And sometimes I think when the fantastic sums of money that are involved in signature events come to the fore, then we're just watching guys who are already extraordinarily wealthy, wealthier than the audience could ever hope to achieve, getting themselves richer. Doesn't quite have the same level of magic. So I think golf faces huge challenges to make that feel attractive. And I think the only way to do that is to have all of the best players effectively playing a world championship around the world. And I'm with Rory McIlroy on that. But also, I go back to what I said right at the start. He said it's pie in the sky at the moment. And that just illustrates how far we have to go to get to that scenario.
Well, however that scenario plays itself out, we will benefit from the reasoned and pragmatic voice and professional voice, such as it is, of Ian Carter. His new book, Golf Wars, coming out in just a few short weeks. Check it out today if you guys get an opportunity. Thank you for your time, my friend. It is, as always, a pleasure to see you, and I look forward to seeing you down the road, the Players or Augusta, as we move forward. As the Fairways of Life show moves forward, when we come back, we're going to touch base with Dom once again about his question of the day. Who do you guys think is going to be the next first-time winner of a major championship? If you'd like to weigh in on the question of the day, log on to the Fairways of Life's YouTube channel to do so. Stay with us.
Yes, hello world, huh?
And with one subtle hello, Tiger began an amazing and unthinkable career.
I've done it for 20 years now with Bridgestone. It allows me to play an aggressive style around the greens, and it's allowed me to win a lot of tournaments.
Bridgestone Golf, proud to be part of your journey.
Boyne Golf provides the ultimate world-class golf destination with 10 championship-caliber courses spanning three resorts. Centered in Michigan's northern Lower Peninsula, the courses are the products of some of the game's masters, including Robert Trent Jones Sr., Arthur Hills, and Donald Ross. From the all-inclusive vacation packages, elite instruction with the Boyne Golf Academy, tournaments, and so much more, Boyne Golf truly offers an unrivaled Michigan golf vacation experience. Just log on to boynegolf.com.
I think when you're training for other sports or why most people go to the gym is so that they can like have muscles and, you know, be strong and be healthy. And a lot of the reason why they struggle to play golf is their body doesn't move properly for them to be able to hit a golf ball. And when you're training for golf, it's a little bit different because you're focused more on flexibility and mobility and being strong in motion. When you're able to kind of have a warm up and have a workout routine and kind of gradually build up to where you're training your body to move properly, yeah, you're going to get a lot of big dividends on the golf course.
Easy now. Find your happy place. It's all in the hips. Just tap it in.
Yes!
Find the latest clubs and apparel at Golf's Happy Place, the PGA Tour Superstore.
What if we started a company and the company was under no time constraints, no financial constraints? The one constraint is their clubs had to be exceptional performers and much better than any other alternative. I was told time and again, it'll never work. It worked like a house of fire. And I'll tell you what, I think our customers love it. BXG, nobody makes golf clubs the way we do, period.
Stride by Zero Friction, the first of its kind personal caddy. Walk in comfort and style with Stride's remote and follow me technology. The Stride handles almost any terrain, and its 54-hole range will last all day. The lightweight design and removable front wheels makes it simple to handle. Plus, it easily fits golf carts. Order yours and save. Visit zerofriction.com/stride or scan the QR code to order yours today. Stride, your personal caddy.
Welcome back to the Fairways of Life show. A few minutes left in Monday's show here today. Question of the day. I'll summarize it for you. Don put it out. You can find it on our YouTube channel, which was, who's going to be the next first-time winner of a major championship? What are you hearing from the people, Dom?
So the options are that I provided. Xander Schauffele, Patrick Cantlay, Max Homa seem like obvious options. And then I have a fourth option, which is right in. And tell me who you think it should be, if not those three guys. 17% are at Xander, 19% with Cantlay, 17% with Homa, and 47% are right in. Andrew, I think Andrew put together something basic on my group of guys there. And the fourth guy you see listed there, I asked him to do that in the last 5 seconds because Victor Hovland is essentially the right-in candidate, Matt. Almost, there's a couple stragglers, you know, there's Joaquin Neiman here, there's a couple guys here and there, but for the most part, the right-ins have been wall-to-wall Victor Hovland. So you can see on the on your screen there the options there for the background for each of those guys, how they fit the bill, if you will. Matt, we only have about 2 minutes left in the show, but I want to show you who my pick is, who's not on this list. I actually think it's going to be Sam Burns, and if you look at his recency bias perhaps, but he's got 5 tour wins to his name. He's inside the top 20, and look at those stats. Top 16 in 7 of his last 8 events, and he's top 20 in everything on tour. So I just think that he's kind of, and I think the last few years, playing in the President's Cup, playing in the Ryder Cup, I don't know. I think he's ready, Matt. I think it's Sam Burns. What do you think?
I think Sam's coming back around again. I think he went off the boil there for a little bit, but I'm seeing the kind of fire in him once again. I mean, if I didn't take of the list that you have or the options that you gave, I would probably go with Xander. Because, look, the next major is the Masters, right? So let's focus on the next major if one of these players break through. In 19, Xander was tied for second. In 20, he was tied for 17th. In 21, he was tied for 30. He was cut in 22. And last year, he was tied for 10th. Hovland, by comparison, very compelling. Tied for 21st, tied for 27th. Last year, tied for 7th. Cantlay, tied for 9th, tied for 17th. Cut, tied for 39th, and tied for 9th. And even Max Homa, who had two cuts and a tie for 40th in his first three Masters, was tied for 10th last year. So it's compelling. But if I had to pick somebody outside that, it's going to be Joaquin Niemann for me. I think when you look at what Joaquin Niemann is doing on a global stage, he was third this past weekend in Asia. He won the Australian Open recently. He's still only 25 years old. And I think that what we see at Augusta is we see an ascension. In 21, he was tied for 40th. In 22, he was tied for 35th. Last year, he was tied for 16th. So he would be my pick in that regard. What a show today, folks, as we wind down to the final few seconds. Thank you so much to Ian Carter for joining us from England today. Thank you to all of you, as ever, for your company. Hope you guys have a great Monday. Hope it is the start of a great week. We'll be back with you again tomorrow if we're spared. Till then, bye for now.